Hello, Internet, and welcome to Old Geek, Young Geek. I am Scott Pell, the Young Geek, and with me, as always, is Steven Johnson, the Old Geek.
That's right.
And with Steven Johnson is his guitar.
Yes, do you have a name? It's my new thing that I'm going to try out. If it's not too annoying, I'm just going to accompany the... It's like if we talk about something sad, I'll be like... Things are very bad at Konami, I hear.
Yeah. does your guitar have a name?
You know what? It doesn't have a name. I've never named my guitar. I've had it for about 20 years, and I've never named it.
I feel like every good guitar player should have, or like any.
That's good because I'm not a good guitar player. So.
Well, even if you're not a good guitar player, I think that your guitar should have a name, especially if you've had it for 20 years.
It's true. I should have a name for my guitar.
Yeah,
and that's what I'm going to do this week. That's going to be my goal, is to come up with some sort of name for my guitar. I mean, I pick Lucille, but B.B. King already got that one.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, yeah. It's So it has been a while since we've been together, so we might be a little bit off kilter.
I know.
But today we're going to talk about video games as we regularly do, and we're going
video games.
And
Boy,
we're
that's
talk,
annoying, isn't it? I'm sorry.
And we're going to talk about open world games versus linear games. I think, Steve Johnson, you're going to be taking the side of open world games because you've said several times on the show that Fallout 3 is your favorite game of all time.
That's true.
And I'm going to be taking the side of linear games because I do love the experience of video games and storytelling being told to me directly.
There you go.
So it's kind of different. So... Yeah, I guess
it's not really a debate, though. I mean, it's not like hate linear games.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like a debate or like which one is better than the other, because people have their different tastes, and maybe I don't play open world games the right way, so I don't really enjoy them as much as someone who does enjoy open world games. So I don't know. I think let's get started here, and I want to talk about linear games because I tend to play a lot of those where it's like the single player campaign, and yeah, it's linear. It's kind of a straight line, and you know, you go from one thing to the next. But I like that format because it allows for good pacing. I feel like it allows the game designer to sort of like let their story be told, because there's a lot of work and effort put into like all these different environments and all these different, you know, lines, the script writing and all that stuff. And with a linear game, you get to experience all that. One of my favorite games is Uncharted 2, which I've talked about on the show before. And I love that game because of its pacing and storytelling and like just all the different things that you get to see and do and experience. It is so fantastic with how it has its ups and downs. And I think that's a great example of how to do a linear game. With something like Fallout 3 or Skyrim, there's a lot of wandering and a lot of just kind of meandering about, and if you happen to come across something, you just kind of do it and it's done and hooray.
Well, I mean, there's a sort of a middle ground, because I don't like games where you're wandering around with no purpose and kind of hoping to come across something interesting, and like sometimes RPGs can get that way, but there's a middle ground where you can keep a narrative flow while also allowing the player freedom within an open world. I mean, games like the GTA games do that really well. I mean, they by creating that interesting structure of having different missions from different people that go different places, but one main mission that you know is the main mission, you know, it allows you to sort of have a driven open world experience almost. You know what I mean? And that's kind of what I'm into. I'm not, like, there's some games that try to mimic like a real world in some way, and that can be really dull if it's done poorly. It can be really like you just go, yeah, but what do I care? Okay, so you just want me to look around and hope I find something? You know, it reminds me sort of like MMOs, and the problem with like MMORPGs is that you're just in this big sandbox, and who cares? But
yeah,
but like a good game, like the Fallout games, the recent Fallout games, and like GTA games is that they do provide you a structure, but then they don't force you to follow it, which I really like. You know, like I love that in Fallout 3 you could destroy the town at the very beginning that gave you all the quests, and then you would still have the same quest, but there would be no way you could really complete it unless you happen to stumble across the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I like that sense of possibility and freedom that comes with open world games, but I also understand that the narratively driven tracked games are that does give you much more freedom with the pacing and that kind of thing.
Yeah. And like I do enjoy open world games. Like Red Dead Redemption, I think is definitely one of my favorites.
Oh, that's a great game, yeah.
Yeah. And what I like about that game is like while there are points where you're just kind of like wandering back and forth from one mission to another.
Oh wait, that's not that. Oh, I meant to play the Western theme, but I don't got it. I'm sorry.
Anyhow, but I like it. But
we're riding the range.
Yeah.
Boy, is that annoying! Oh my god, that's so annoying to try and have a conversation with someone playing a guitar. I can't.
It
even
is true. But I don't know, because like you want to enjoy the music, and I can't really talk. What I like about Red Dead Redemption is like while you're going about the landscape, things will happen. Like someone will be like being held up, like a stagecoach would be held up, or someone will be attacked by wolves, or someone will be like help save me, or something of the sort. And you can just choose to like run by that or not. And that's a nice little touch. That's a nice little flair. But as you're saying, like Grand Theft Auto has a good way of making it like a playground, like with things to do.
Right.
You can go see shows, you can go do mini games, and there are activities, and I think that's what really makes for a really good sandbox and open world experience, is that there is activity.
Right, like it's not a big empty box, yeah.
Right, and that's what I feel like a lot of poorly done open world games are, is that they're just open, and it isn't very lively. And that's why I like linear games, because it's all kind of plotted out for you. Like it's an experience that is planned.
Right. You know, it's also feel like open world games present is one of the narrative problems that video games as a genre or an art form face, is that how are you going to, like, when you're playing a video game and there's some, it's an open world game and there's some time imperative, like, I don't know, somebody's going to come and destroy the world in X amount of time.
Yeah.
And then you go, you know, dicking around, you know, trying to collect things and, you know, talking to different people. Or if you're in GTA, mm-hmm. you know,
yeah.
running a triathlon. It really does break the narrative of the game in a way that I don't feel like
totally
video game makers have solved that particular problem yet. Because
that happens all the time.
Yeah.
Like, even in linear games. In Tomb Raider, the recent one by Crystal Dynamics, there's a scene where, like, these rescue like pilots come in, their plane is shot down, and they parachute and they're injured and they need help. And so Lara Croft is like, I have to go save them. And then along your way, like, you'll get a notification like, ba-ding, you can raid a tomb. So you can take the time while this guy is lying like on the ground with a broken leg, bleeding out, about to be attacked by savages, like, oh, I'll go do some exploring. That's what I hate about video games and their narratives, is like, oh, the world is going to end, but you can do chicken farming. Like,
yeah, like, what, like, is that? It's not a problem that you even recognize until you're trying to recognize it as a problem, because it's so built into playing video games. Like, is that, oh, well, there's these side quests.
Yeah.
There's this other stuff
exactly.
you can do. But there's no real imperative to finish anything ever, even though the narrative tries to pretend that you do.
Uh-huh.
It'd be weird. It'd be like if there were a movie,
uh-huh.
and then the characters were like, okay, well, we have to destroy the Death Star, but then we followed Luke Skywalker while he had some dinner and he got dressed,
yeah,
and then
exactly.
he talked to his friend and was like, yeah, you know, it's gonna be a dangerous mission, but
he went back to the farm,
yeah, went back and
earned
said
some money
to some people, and
finally got those capacitors,
right? And then when
yeah.
he got back, they would still be having that meeting where they're talking about how they're going to destroy the Death Star.
Yeah.
Yes, it's been 8 months,
that,
but I'm back at the meeting.
That's a video game storytelling.
It's true. It is.
And I've experienced a game once where it actually forced you on a time limit. Fable 3. And it's not a very good
right.
game. But like, if you just kind of screw around,
Majora's
and
Mask,
do like Majora's Mask, but you have control over the time limit.
Uh-huh.
You know,
yeah,
you do have control
right.
over time. Whereas Fable 3 is just like, okay, you've done enough real estate and the loot playing. You need to get business, because that's what I did. Like, I was really bad at making money, but like, I was a street performer, but I was also like the prince or king of Albion. So like, what am I doing? I didn't really understand it, but like if you spend too much time just doing side questing and stuff like that, all of a sudden a switch will be thrown and then the end of the world will suddenly happen.
I didn't know that. I don't know that I got to that point in the game. Yeah, I don't know that I played it that far.
It wasn't a good game, but it would do that, though. Like, it would just suddenly be like, boom, the time is now. You are going to die if you don't fight or whatever. Like, it was just kind of weird because, like, if you just kind of let things play out, it'll suddenly just drop it on you. Like, this is the end of the world. There's one way to set, like, precedence and one way to set, like, okay, this is priority number one for you. And you can do that with the writing, and you can do that with all that stuff. You can even throw, like, a timer up at the top of the screen. But even that's still annoying. And some people will just ignore the narrative altogether and the writing. People will just, like, laugh at how freaked out these people are and just be like, oh, whatever, I'm the hero of this game. And that's kind of, like, the pacing that I get from, all video games in general is how it tells the stories. And, I don't know. When it comes to, like, narrative with open world games, each quest is its own sort of linear game because it says, like, okay, you're in this area, go over here and do this thing and then come back to me. And so, like, you go throughout these little events that they have planned out for you. Like, there are certain events that you can't do unless you have this certain quest activated.
Right.
And I think that's cool because it's, like, multiple games within one game. But they all abide by the same rules.
It makes me wonder if people are just going to get used to that as a way of storytelling, or are video games going to find a way to solve that particular problem? I don't know.
In one way.
What do you mean?
Are people just going to get used to, like, the whole
narrative? Is it just, like, because narrative? Already I imagine, like, some people listening, and myself too, are like, well, I don't understand. It doesn't throw you in a video game when all of a sudden, when you have to save the world, but really you don't have to.
Yeah.
You know, like, you can go do other things. Where if you were watching that in a film, it would never fly. You would be like, no.
Wait a minute.
Why? I don't understand. They're supposed to save the world, but they went shopping instead because they wanted to get a better sword? Like, that doesn't make any sense. The comet is headed right toward Earth. Like, why are they doing anything except trying to stop that comet? In fact, like structurally, that's one of the things that in screenplay writing that is just drilled into you, is that, like, the engine of the story must always be propelling it forward. Like, there's no side quests, there's no digressions, there's nothing like that, because it would be deadly dull to watch. Kinds of movies does that sort of thing work, and it's really specific kinds of movies, and it's not action movies, you know?
I mean, like, and it isn't going to happen over one movie either. Like, Harry Potter, Lord of the Rings, Star Wars even, like, they have to go and do all of these things in order to complete their journey.
Right.
You know? So, like, that is kind of where that fits in. But if I just want, like, one experience, you know, it's going to be, you know, in one movie. It's going to be over a span of movies.
Right.
I mean, those movies are great. I love the Harry Potter movies and Lord of the Rings.
You know, I've never seen a single Harry Potter movie.
You never seen a single Harry Potter movie?
Not one. I saw all the Star Wars movies, and I saw all the Lord of the Rings movies, but I just have not seen any.
Harry Potter's good.
I'm going to watch it with my son as soon as he's interested. We're going to start watching them.
Sure.
Speaking of my son and movies, we had talked a little bit about this before we hit record, that I know you haven't seen a bunch of movies this summer. But Dexter, my son, is 8, and now he's getting really interested in going to see movies. So I go see movies that I probably wouldn't ordinarily see, which in this summer included The Fantastic Four.
Oh, dear.
I don't know if
Let's
you've
rant
heard
about
this
second.
Fantastic Four.
I've only heard bad things.
I have to play sad music because it's The Fantastic Four. Because I paid $8 to see The Fantastic Four. I could have paid more. I will never get this time back that I spent at Fantastic Four. That's the Fantastic Four. I just made that up, ladies and gentlemen.
Hold on.
Fantastic Four is the worst movie I have seen in I don't even know how long. It is unspeakably dismal. That is how it is. This movie, I don't like superhero movies as a genre. I don't usually go see them. It's just not my thing. I don't have a problem with them. It's just not my thing. It's like not what I get excited about. But if there's one thing I want to see when I go to a superhero movie, it is the superheroes doing cool stuff with their powers. And I imagine this is everyone who goes to see a superhero movie. This is what you pay for the price for. Am I right, Scott? Would you say that that's so?
I mean, I enjoy superhero movies myself.
So when you
like
go
the,
see Iron Man,
like
you want to see Iron Man do cool stuff, right?
Yeah, and now that I've become acquainted with Iron Man, and now that I know his character more, I want to see more of Tony Stark more than I do Iron Man sometimes. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they do that well, sometimes they don't. But, you know, there are characters and personality traits to these superheroes, and, you know, I want that to come through, and I also want that to be... You know, because they bring themselves onto the battlefield.
But imagine if you saw Iron Man, and Iron Man didn't get his powers until past halfway through the movie, and then when he did, they never showed him doing anything cool. They never showed him saving anybody or thwarting any kind of crime. And that's what the Fantastic Four movie is like until about maybe the last 10 minutes of the movie. And it's just
really
the most dreary movie. It's dull, like you would not believe. Like it's the color
palette.
So
it all comes together. Okay,
so let's
finale.
Say you're the director of a superhero movie, and they say, "Okay, well, you're going to direct the Fantastic Four movie. What would you like it to look like?" This director said, apparently,
yeah.
"I would like the color palette to be all grays and blacks and muted colors, and I'm going to desaturate all the colors, and I'm going to set everything. I'm going to have every shot take place in interiors, so that it's always kind of dreary and dark on the screen, and there's nothing fun about any of the visuals. That's how I'm going to do my Fantastic Four movie."
You know, I blame Christopher Nolan for that.
You know what? You're right. You're right.
Because, like, the Dark Knight series was absolutely fantastic. I did love the Batman trilogy, but it worked for Batman because Batman is dark and he is dreary.
Right.
And, you know, he's more realistic because he relies on physical strength, you know, cunning, and his gadgetry, whereas, you know, other superheroes with superpowers, you know, they are a bit more colorful, they're a bit more fantastic, if you will.
Yeah, but even the Batman movies, you still see Batman doing cool stuff. He might be conflicted about it,
he might
be a dark character. But you know what? At the end of the day, you want to see him drive really fast in the Batmobile.
Yeah.
Like, you want to see him rappelling around with his gadgetry and stuff, and you get to see that in the Christopher Nolan movies. And I know that's like the most simplistic way of looking at a superhero movie ever, but if you don't have that element, you don't even have a superhero movie. And that's what the Fantastic Four is like. It is like unbelievably bad. Like I didn't even know that they still made movies that bad. Not to mention that the script is really stupid and all the dialogue is really stupid and the story is really stupid. But that I could put up with. It's a superhero movie. What do I care? I mean, you know, Ant-Man was pretty stupid too. But, you know, at least you got to see Ant-Man doing cool stuff. So don't go see The Fantastic Four, anybody who's thinking about it. But do go see NWA's movie Straight Outta Compton because it's fantastic. I saw that on Friday night. Oh, my God. That movie is great. If you like NWA.
Okay.
If you don't like NWA, you probably won't like it. Gotta tell you.
So summer movies have been... Would you say it's a good year for summer movies this year?
Overall, I think it's about an average year. Like,
Okay.
I can't think of anything personally that I've seen this summer that is new that really blew my mind. But again, I'm not...
Yeah.
I guess I'm not really a summer movie kind of person. Like, I'm not a big blockbuster guy. It's not my thing.
Yeah. I mean, like, there was Mad Max, which we did an episode on.
Oh, you know what? Mad Max, I forgot. That movie blew me away.
I saw that a couple weeks ago. It was pretty good. So that'd be, like, the fourth time that I've seen it now. And I still enjoy that movie.
So that makes it a watershed year for summer movies. Because that's the best movie I've seen in years and years and years. That's a great film.
Mm-hmm. And that was really good. And to bring it back on topic, the pacing was really good of the storyteller.
Yes.
Even though they like went to one point and then turned around and went back, it had drive, it had purpose.
Yes.
It was really well done.
Yeah, and there was no point where like Mad Max decided to go off and, you know, I want to improve the truck, so I'm going to collect scrap metal in the desert for 45 minutes.
Yeah, which they have a video game coming out that is Mad Max where you do just that.
I'm sure. But,
yeah.
Because what else are you going to do? I mean, like... And also, you know, the other thing about video games that we didn't talk about, since we're talking about narrative and video games, is that unlike movies, I mean, video game narrative has got to be 20 hours long at the very least. And that's a long time. Like, that's a... And people expect that, and they judge the games based on how long they are, which I think is crazy, but you know, a lot of
length
people...
does not dictate quality by any means, mm-hmm. because you can have like a 600-hour game and have it just be grind and filler and padding just so that you can reach that length.
Right.
No, you can have a good story and be short. You can have a long story and still be good. And, you know, you have to be able to pace that and plan that and have it full and a wholesome experience. One game that I, like, enjoy to its extent is Dragon Age Inquisition. There's a lot of running around and, like, going to different places, but I know why I'm there.
Right.
And I discover more things to do while I'm there. It's a joy to take in. Like, it is absolutely gorgeous. Each environment, each place that you go to has a distinct personality, look, and feel to it that is just enrapturing. Like, it's so fantastic. I love that game because of its story, its characters, its environments, the things that I get to do, my different playstyles that I can experiment with. The, like, everything in that game culminates to create a good story and a place where I want to just spend so much time in, because that's what I do. Like, when I play that game, I do end up wandering around a lot, but I feel as though it's all for a purpose, because everything that I discover, every quest that I complete, all goes towards the end goal of helping out the cause of the Inquisition. So, like, I complete a quest, and that gives me, like, notoriety or, like, fame for the Inquisition. Like, it spreads word about the Inquisition. It gives me power so that I can go and do other quests on the map. There's lots of stuff, and it all goes towards a purpose, as opposed to just experience for my character so that I can level up. That feels good, and that's a good way to tell a story, because it still plays into the overall narrative.
Right.
I think that's how you do a good open world game, is by tying it in to your main quest, tying it into the main story, because, like, there is a reason that the Inquisition exists, and there's a reason that you are the leader of the Inquisition, and, you know, you're reminded that every time that, like, you get more power, or you get more, notoriety,
uh-huh.
it all works, and it's just a fantastic game. Now, I'm gonna talk a little bit about Fallout, where last time I played Fallout, it was Fallout New Vegas, and I was just in a desert.
That does a good job of that, too, I thought.
It's barren and empty.
It is.
I mean,
you're right about that.
But that's the point, though.
Yeah.
But it's kind of also boring.
In New Vegas, there's the main plot line, and then what I enjoyed about the way it was structured story-wise was all of the side quests relate to the main plot.
Yeah.
In some way or another. And even
most,
if you skip them...
Most of them.
Maybe there's a few that don't, but... So that was kind of cool, but I get what you're saying, that it is one environment that does get very repetitive and like the real desert, it's flat and boring.
Yeah, and that's the thing, though, is, like, I guess that I just have a really short attention span, and I love visiting different places in video games, because I just get bored easily.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, to make one environment interesting and someplace that I really want to stay and hang around with, that takes a lot for me. And so I like linear video games because they do sort of have, like, different locations that you can travel. Like, each level has a different, like, angle to it and a different, like, sort of theme. And that's what I like about linear games, is that, like, you know, each sort of chapter and level has a different sort of, you know, aspect to it that makes it engaging to me.
Right, and everything has been
carefully planned out, whereas... open world games might have some RNG or random dumber generation.
Yeah, you know, I read this a couple of years ago about the statistics on how many people actually finish the games they play, and it's not most people.
Yeah.
So the later levels in games, not a lot of people get to see or choose to.
That's a shame.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of work that goes into that. You know.
Yeah, but then I've got a ton of half finished games that I was like, got bored
me too.
With.
I'm working through that, which is why I started my Twitch stream. Shameless plug.
Oh yeah,
but,
totally. Play
yeah,
Twitch
so
stream.
my Twitch stream is, like, I play games that I haven't played or completed all the way yet, and so I've gotten to experience a lot of different games, and, you know, get to experience them all the way through. One of those games I played was Chrono Trigger. That has an open world game and a big old narrative that all ties into the gameplay mechanics, and I think that it comes back to, like, the time control mechanic,
mm-hmm.
where, like, you have a lot of different eras that you can go to and visit, and you can control the flow of time, basically, with your time machine. And Majora's Mask is sort of open-ended, but you have control of the time machine. And Chrono Trigger has a really good story structure with its narrative, because, like, for half of the game, it's very linear in, like, all the different quests that you do, but you still have, like, the choices to go here and there and do side quests. But then, like, at a certain point, it just opens up, and you can basically do, like, loyalty missions like you do in Mass Effect 2. So you get to experience, like, your characters and their personalities and their goals and their motives and their pasts and all that stuff. And I think that's really important to tell a good story, because it's centralized around your characters. And that's why I think that's the key to a good story. I don't really get that from an open world game, because your characters that you create and the characters that you encounter are just kind of boring and flat, or quest givers, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, I think, like, the ultimate illustration of that is, like, MMORPGs are the ultimate illustration of that. Because is there...
For sure.
I don't... Personally, having... I spent a long time playing Warcraft back in the day, and I don't even think that I ever read any of the quest text or cared why or anything. It was just like, okay, well, I gotta go into that dungeon and get this shit, whatever. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, I just have to go here and then...
Do XYZ, and then...
Yeah, do XYZ and then come back.
And maybe that's me. Maybe that's my... I also never watched any of the cutscenes in any Halo games. I just never watched them. I was like, yeah, I know, I gotta walk into the room and kill the guys. I get it. Like, you don't have to...
Yeah.
I don't
and
need
that,
more
and
than
that's
that.
The thing is, I don't know, I loved the original Halo because it just felt like a pulp sci-fi novel. You know, it just had that sort of cheap quality with, like, I don't know, there was something endearing about it where it's like nothing was crystal clear and it's like, oh, this is an alien world and all that stuff. And I watched the cutscenes, I got involved in the story. But I don't know, a lot of people talk about, like, shooters these days as just like a hallway with dudes, and you know, that's Call of Duty.
But that, shooters have always been a hallway with dudes, though. I mean, what is Doom but a hallway with dudes, you know?
Well, Doom's story was like, you're on Mars, there are demons, kill them.
Right, exactly. And,
and now they've just interchanged Mars and demons with place and terrorists.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, that's kind of the same thing.
Random,
I mean,
brown,
like,
people and place.
But yeah. And that's sad, and that's probably another podcast for another time. But...
I know, exactly. You know, that is something we should do a podcast about. It's like,
But as two white dudes talking about racism in video,
I know,
games,
right? We should find somebody who isn't white to give a different perspective.
Yeah,
because it is like, I get that. Like, I'm a pretty liberal guy, but I also try not to speak for anybody except you know, other white people.
Yeah,
I feel okay telling other white people how to act, but I don't anybody else. Sure. When it comes to race, I mean, when it comes to anything else, I'll tell everyone how to act, because I clearly know better. And I would tell people of any race, don't have conversations while you're noodling around on a guitar, because it is incredibly annoying to the person that you're talking with.
It's true. It's very true. Speaking from experience, that's happening right now.
This is an illustration.
Yeah.
So anyways, Kat.
Yeah.
I went down to the river and I got myself some pizza pie.
Wow. It's a pretty cool river.
Yeah, it's a hell of a river that I went down to. I'm sorry, I'm in a weird mood today, Scott. You have to excuse me.
It's all right. It's Sunday.
Exactly. It's Sunday. It's August. We're all, you know.
We're a little bit crazy.
It's 100 degrees here in Los Angeles, and it's actually hotter than that. It was, I had to have been 105 yesterday. I bet you it gets up to 110 today. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Man. So, you know, I'm cooped up in the house with the air conditioning, and that's all I got.
Yeah.
So go see the NWA movies. You like NWA, Scott?
I like a couple of their songs, yeah.
The movie's really good.
Yeah.
I mean, it's better than it had any, better than you would think it would have been. Like, the acting is all fantastic, and the music obviously is incredible. The story is, from what I understand, pretty true to life, so it's not incredibly plot driven because it's actual events that actually happened, but it's just fascinating.
There's
just such an interesting, like, look into the sort of cultural world of Los Angeles in the 90s and where that music came from, and where like what the experiences of the people that were that would result in you writing the angriest music that's ever come out. And you even if you didn't know NWA or you didn't kind of get what they were about, if you saw this movie, you would go, it makes a whole lot of sense that they wrote a song called Fuck the Police. Okay, I get it. You know, Los Angeles in the late 80s and early 90s was just not the police department's philosophy was so repressive toward people that it is no wonder that there was huge riots in response to it, because
yeah,
like since then, however, this is I'm going to end this section on a positive note. After the LA riots, people who don't live in Los Angeles probably don't know this, but they totally overhauled the way the police department relates to the community, and they started doing a community policing model, and they got rid of the chief of police, and or the commissioner, I guess. And since then, things have gotten a lot better. Things have gotten really a lot better in the neighborhoods that were burned up during the riot, and the relations between the police and the people that they serve are 180 degrees, very different, and things are much better. So it's not as if there is no possibility for redemption in these situations, because there is. Also, everybody moved to Riverside who didn't have any money, because LA got more gentrified. So that didn't hurt either, but there you go. That's my soapbox from the NWA movie.
That's good to hear. That's good to hear that things have turned around.
It is. It's nice. I mean, I think there's problems like there is anywhere, and yeah. I understand they're sort of getting worse this summer. But on the whole, things are not nearly as deadly and dangerous as they were in the 1980s when that urban gang violence in Los Angeles was at its very height. It was scary back then, but now it's whatever.
Yeah.
I play some NWA songs, but they don't translate well to acoustic guitars. I've tried, believe me.
Okay, I'm sure that you have, and I commend you for it.
Coming straight out of Compton! Crazy mother... it doesn't do it, see? See what I'm saying?
Yeah. Need to alter that a little bit so it sounds more acoustic friendly.
Exactly. Hey, now I'm going to give, since we're talking summer movies, I am going to talk about another movie that I saw this summer, but it came out in 1981, but it never really got much release.
Okay.
And it is a movie called Roar, R-O-A-R. And this is the craziest, most ahead of its time movie that I've ever seen. It was re-released this summer in a very limited art house run. And here's the movie, Scott, and you're going to have to look up the trailer because it will blow your mind. Tippi Hedren, the actress, and her husband, who was a film producer, were really into lions and huge cats. And they had a bunch of money in the 70s, so they built this big ranch in the valley here in Los Angeles, and they got all of these jungle cats, like real lions, tigers, panthers, etc., a bunch of them. Like, there had to be 25 of these big, huge cats in this wildlife preserve here in the San Fernando Valley. And they shot a movie over the course of 7 years. And the movie is people acting while surrounded by live tigers and lions that are not constrained in any way. So on film, the lions often attack the actors. People run from the lions attack each other, and it is the most harrowing, suspenseful, scary movie I have ever seen in my life. Every single scene is absolutely riveting, because you know that these are not stuntmen. This is Tippi Hedren and Melanie Griffith, by the way, who's Tippi Hedren's daughter, and they are actually interacting with these huge jungle cats. And like, the number of people who were injured in the filming of the movie is astronomical. Like, you could never shoot a movie like this now. You could never get the insurance for it. And Tippi Hedren had a broken leg. Like, her husband, whose name I forget, he had all these injuries, including like puncture wounds that got gangrene. And then Melanie Griffith had facial reconstructive surgery because a lion ate her face. And all this is in this movie, and it is unbelievably riveting. Like, you can't take your eyes away from it. It is one of the most interesting films I've ever seen. I've never seen anything like it. And if you get a chance, I don't think it's actually been released on any kind of DVD yet, but when it does come out, get Roar and watch it. It is unreal, this movie.
So this movie was made in 1981.
Made in 1981.
They just did a re-release run around Los Angeles?
Yeah, you know, it came out in 1981, and it did not make very much money, and was critically like panned. Like, people really didn't... Like, critics really didn't like it. And I kind of can't understand why.
What was the story of it? Like,
okay, the story is very simple. When you have this set of constraints in your film, you have to keep a very simple story. And the story is basically, this guy lives in Africa with all these cats, and his family doesn't. So they come visit him, but he doesn't tell him that he lives with all of these huge cats. And he's not there when they show up, right?
Oh.
So they are just captured by these huge animals, and then they have to try to survive in this environment. And then he is trying to get back to them so he can rescue them.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's really unbelievable. I mean, as a narrative film, I mean, if it were all fake and they weren't real lions and it was CGI or whatever, it wouldn't be very good or interesting. But because you know it isn't, when you're watching it, it's you can't take your eyes off it. It's really unbelievable.
I mean, like, it's a decent concept, but I think that you could still have the same effect with, like, trained animals.
Yes.
Deal.
But I don't know.
These were not trained animals, right?
Well, I mean, they're...
These are just, like,
tame.
Held in captivity.
I mean, they're tame enough that they don't immediately kill anyone that walks into their sphere of influence. I mean, they were raised from cubs, I think, by Tippi Hedren and her husband. But you want to know the coolest thing about this ranch?
What's that?
It's still there, and Tippi Hedren is still it's still her where she lives. But I just found out the other day, a friend of mine, I was telling her about this great movie, and she was like, "You know, Steve, they give tours of that ranch every month." And I'm like, "No." And she's like, "Yeah." So I am going to go and see Tippi Hedren's ranch full of crazy lions and panthers. Yeah. I'm very excited.
Sounds like a family vacation.
Yeah, I'm sure. No children are allowed. You can't be under 18 and go, because you have to sign something that says, "Hey, these are wild animals." I mean, I'm sure you can't get near the actual. I hope, anyway.
I would hope so.
But yeah,
if you're no longer on the podcast,
I know exactly. You'll know if I get attacked by a lion. It'll totally have been worth it.
Yeah.
It'll all be worth it.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was the best movie that I saw this summer. That and Mad Max were the two finest movies I've seen this summer.
Cool.
Roar, one, Mad Max.
Yeah. One was from 1981 and one was from this year. So
there you go. Well, cool, man. Let's try and have a podcast next week.
Okay.
And
we'll
not have it be forever and ever. Maybe I'll see if we'll talk about this off the air, what we'll talk about next week.
Yeah, for sure. We'll talk about it next week.
Next week's gonna be cool, man. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, it's
for anybody
great.
Listening, it's gonna be the best.
Okay. So for those of you who are still listening, thank you. And we love
if anybody
you.
Is.
And we had a blast doing this podcast. I hope that you enjoyed listening as well.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. We loved doing a podcast for you. We'll try to do more podcasts in the future. I wish I had an ending for that. That'd be awesome. And I won't. I promise I won't play guitar during the podcast. This was a failed experiment.
Yeah, I don't.
You're not feeling it, Scott?
I'm not feeling it. It's a little bit distracting.
Okay. All right. Point taken. Point taken.
You're very good at playing guitar.
You got to try new things if you're gonna.
I
you got to innovate.
Maybe I should get like a soundboard.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Have like random sound effects and stuff like that.
Yeah.
That'll be.
I think we should go out on some NWA. Can you lay some NWA into this when you're putting it together, Scott?
I'll do my best.
Sweet. That's all we can ask of you.
Okay.
All right.
Well, thank you everyone for listening, and we will see you next time.
And fuck the police.
Well, don't. But be respectful to the police.
All right.
Authorities. Okay.
Cool,
bye.
Everybody. Bye.
And if you like today's podcast, let us know. Send us a tweet at @oldgeekyounggeek on Twitter, or send us an email at oldgeekyounggeek@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. And now I'm living in correctional facilities. Cause some don't agree with how I do this. I get straight and meditate like a Buddhist. I'm dropping flavor, my behavior is hereditary. But my technique is very necessary. Blame it on Ice Cube, because he said it gets funky when you got a subject and a predicate. Add it on a dope beat, and it'll make you think. Some suckers just tickle me pink to my stomach, cause they don't flow like this one. You know what? I won't hesitate to diss one or two before I'm through, so don't try to sing this. Some drop science, well, I'm dropping English. Even if Yella makes it a cappella, I still express, yo, I don't smoke. Cause it's known to give a brother brain damage, and brain damage on the mic don't manage nothing but making a sucker in you equal. Don't be another sequel. Spread yourself.